That's a great question.
That's a good question.
Great question.
That's a great question.
Well, that's a really good question.
It's a great question.
Well, you're right.
Welcome to the Sean Morgan Report. I'm here with Tobin Smith, formerly of Fox News and author of The Billion Dollar Green, Profit from the Eco Revolution. Tobin, thanks for joining. You know, I just wanted to get your insight on this breaking news article from Zero Hedge about the idea that the Biden administration and the Department of Defense here is invoking the Defense Production Act to boost metals mining because of these Chinese export controls. It's two types of metals nobody's ever heard of, but they use them for the chips for the defense industry.
You haven't heard of gallium? Come on.
No, it's not something that I study and think about, but most people don't. But, you know, there's other metals that everyone is familiar with that do you think, like copper and silver and these big metals, do you think that those types of metals might see a big shortage and the government might get involved with subsidizing and helping out with domestic production and so forth?
Well, you know, it's a tale of two cities here, right? Europe has passed the largest green energy funding bill in the history of history, about $7 trillion all in. The United States, with our Inflation Reduction Act, probably the funniest name I've ever heard for a green energy plan, is $4 trillion. And then you add in bonds, green bonds, big pension plans, particularly ESG type plans, funds are sitting with hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars to lend into these businesses. So there's capital there. But if you go back to the politics for a second, we are at a business war with China. I mean, it's been happening for years. It just stepped up recently. We also now are saying that we're not going to allow cloud computing companies like Amazon and Google, so on and so forth. We're not going to allow them to sell cloud services to China. I mean, this is going tit for tat and tit for tat. And ultimately, the world's sort of the loser on this. But what you really want to make sure is that you have your supplies outside of China for the stuff that you really, really need. And, you know, I know copper is one of the things on that list. There is no EV business without copper. There is no solar. There is no wind. There is no hydrogen economy without billions of pounds of copper. And the problem for Europe is they don't have any copper. The problem for many parts of the United world is they don't have any copper. And that's number one. Number two is that even the copper that has not been mined, but we know where it is, and there's billions and billions of tons of it. But right now, and when it's, you know, when we're getting $2.25 a pound for copper, all the experts say, yeah, sorry, man, but we're going to need about $4.50 a pound before we're ever going to go after that copper, because it's billions and billions of dollars to go after new copper. And to go out to closed copper mines to regenerate them, there's not enough people in the copper business, Sean. I mean, I was just looking at data at the Colorado School of Mines, my favorite data. And if you look at the engineers in minerals and you look at engineers in oil and gas, it's about 20 to 1. The young people aren't seeing a future in that. At the same time, we're going to essentially have this Cold War or copper war, if you will, with China. Something's got to break, because you got to get $4 prices to pull it out of and start pulling it out of the ground. And if you don't start pulling it out of the ground, you're going to even have higher prices.
That's a good point. And I had no idea before I started researching this about copper that China uses 55% of it. Of course, their huge infrastructure projects that they do really plays into that demand. But electric vehicles require 400% more copper than a gas-powered car. And solar and wind farms require 200% more copper than a coal-fired power plant. And you were telling me before the show that even nuclear power plants use more copper than a coal-fired power plant. So it's everything that has to do with energy and the energy of the future, transportation of the future, is copper-based.
It's you know, you don't see it. I built a house years ago, a three-story house in Bethesda, Maryland, right? And I would go out about every week to go look at how that was going. And when the copper guys came in, blew my mind how much copper went into a three-story house. I had no freaking idea. I remember looking at the bill for all the stuff to build the house, and copper was the third most expensive, more, you know, behind the wood, right? Well, think about a building. Think about any structure where there's electrical power being conducted, and there's no substitute for copper. Maybe your kids or my kids maybe will figure that out. But it's been 100 years. No one's figured it out yet. There is nothing that conducts electricity faster, cheaper, and with less heat, which is the real key.
Cheaper is the main thing because, you know, silver conducts very well, but you can't have silver wires in your house. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
So it conducts better than any non-precious metal. It's just a unique substance in this earth. There's only one thing that can do this. And so we got to figure out how to get more of it because, as I understand it, the demand, the green demand for copper is just increasing really quickly. In 2020, it was 4% of copper demand was green demand. This year, 7%, and in a decade, it'll be 47%. So how are we going to meet that demand with the supply? How is that going to, how's that going to play out with pricing and everything?
Well, I mean, there's two ways you know, in the commodity world, somebody can price support it. In other words, governments can come in and lend money or put money into these new mines to get them up and going, because as I told you before, I worked with the Mongolian government in 2012 negotiating the largest at the time new copper mine. They wound up getting 40% of that revenue, and because of that, Robert Friedland and Ivanhoe Mines and other people were able to get that mine up and going, and it's basically, you know, saved Mongolia, for lack of a better word. Wonderful people, not a lot of going on in Mongolia, okay? In the other countries that have big copper, it's also, you know, countries that are third world countries that if they get those mines up and going, and maybe they get the, you know, some of the European Union funds to guarantee some of this stuff, because the European Union does not hit its goal without billions of pounds of copper. And they're not going to get it from Europe because Europe has a lot of nice things going for it. Great wine, a lot of great skiing, no copper. But countries in Africa, Central Africa, certainly in South America, those countries are all going to be central to this. And they're not going to give their stuff up easy. It's going to be more expensive, but there's no choice. We don't get to a carbon neutral world without billions of pounds of copper. And, you know, strangely or not, United States, I mean, we have a big, I'm in Arizona. The biggest copper mine in the United States is about 20 miles away. There's two other mines that are bigger than that Freeport-McMoRan has not touched. Why? Too expensive to get at them. Permitting would take 10 years. The ecological assessment and the offsets they would have to buy make them uneconomic.
It's just not feasible.
Yeah, so here you are.
Yes.
You have $14 trillion around the world to build carbon neutral or negative carbon infrastructure, and we don't have near enough copper to do it. So all those plans don't work if we don't have the copper. And that copper has to be at $4 a pound, not $2 a pound, to be recoverable, to be economic, which means, you know what? I'd like to own a few copper mines, Sean. What's it for?
I'm going to start hoarding pennies because this is getting me excited. But, you know, let's talk about the EU, because I understand the politicians, for whatever reason, are ideologically aligned with the idea of carbon neutral future and green energy and so forth. But, you know, this Defense Production Act in the U.S. is all about our defense security and being able to produce weapons with these unique rare earth minerals. Yeah. What about the security issues in Europe? What's the driver there? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, getting Ukraine into NATO is going to be the first part of that. And when they do that, now you got Ivan at the door, and everybody's sense of security needs go up, number one. Number two, energy security is now physical security. And it just never was that way before. Russia, I just call them Ivan because I can't stand them. They cut off the natural gas. They drove the economy into the dirt. Then they invaded, for crying out loud. So obviously Europe is never going to get natural gas out of them. Europe, the only natural gas in Europe is in the Netherlands. And it's in a huge field that has 13 earthquakes per day because they're sucking so much natural gas out. And they just closed 10 out of those 13 fields. So the only way that Europe gets natural gas is from good old America via LNG and some other areas. But in terms of copper, to be able to actually spend that $7 or $10 trillion to get to the decarbonized economy,
right?
I guarantee that countries like the EU is going to go guarantee $4 copper for some of these mines to get them going, because they take 10 years. I mean, it takes 8 to 10 years to get them permitted and up and going. And if there's this gap, then Europe is always going to be insecure because they're going to depend on other people for energy. But they would get secure if they were able to build enough electric power generation and utilize that via electric motors and cars and buses, by the way.
When Europe buys or secures its copper supply, it's buying a sense of energy security, because, I mean, Russia just shut down the largest nuclear power plant in Europe that's in Ukraine that they control now. We know what happened to the Nord Stream pipeline and the natural gas that you mentioned. So Europe's going to have to build a whole bunch of wind farms that take a whole bunch of copper, solar farms that take a whole bunch of copper, electric vehicles and so forth to lower demand for gasoline, petroleum, and all that. That takes a lot of copper. So everything that has to do with this green energy and transportation and infrastructure future for Europe is going to take a whole bunch of copper.
Well, remember also, I think people forget that the EU, the European Union, has about 564 million population. The United States has about 320 million. Our economy is bigger than all the EU. But for the EU just to stay up with the 500 plus million people, they have no choice. They have absolutely no choice. So hard decisions are going to be made here. I know personally that we own some stocks of companies, public companies that are in development in copper. I sort of like buy them and put them in, my IRA. I don't look at them, because ultimately the prices have to double to be economic. If they don't double, then the economies go downhill. It's a lose-lose situation. The China issue is really just started now, Sean. And the question, and even Janet Yellen today had said, if we're going at this with a winners take all type approach, we're all going to fail. Cooler heads need to prevail in this issue, because there's some issues that is fail. And not having
is something Republicans and Democrats are agreeing on things. Yeah. Agreeing on things like securing uranium supply for our energy needs and weapons needs and so forth. And now, of course, metals like copper, rare earth minerals in the case of the Defense Production Act news. But, copper's apparently very in high demand with its projections here. Tobin, I wanted to ask you about these companies, because my understanding what's happening is these big, really big billion-dollar mining companies and so forth are seeing the writing on the wall. They know the demand is going to increase. And so they're buying up a lot of these small miners, and there's a consolidation going on in the industry. Is that a good sign when they start doing that?
Well, Sean, there's this thing called economics, and size matters. In mining, it always has. It's made it, in oil and natural gas and so forth. And so because these are all billion-dollar projects, they really have no choice, number one. Number two, in the mining industry, the smaller startup mines are the people who are doing the exploration and then find the stuff. The whole business model is to sell to somebody bigger. I mean, they know they're not going to have the Freeport McMoRan is a $68 billion company with a huge amount of cash flow, et cetera. You're going to see consolidation, because that's the only way it works. That's economics 101. And the companies that we invest in on the smaller side are ones that have great copper, a big supply, but they know that the handoff is going to be to one of the majors in copper simply because of the law of supply and demand and the law of economics. You know, as an investor, that's why I have, you know, small companies, and I don't worry about them for the next year, 2 years or 3 years. But clearly, if they have great quality copper, if they have deep, rich veins, if it's reasonable cost to then put the trucks down to take it out of the ground and then refine it, they're going to be worth 2, 3, 5, 10 times, you know, what they are today, simply because, again, law of economics. At $2, zero profit. At $2.50, profit goes up exponentially. At $4, it goes up exponentially, because there's no more fixed. Once you have the fixed cost taken out, every, you know, 10 cents above your fixed cost, profit margin goes higher. So that's just the law of economics.
It's amazing, because usually only venture capitalists get those types of multiples. So it's quite an opportunity. But I wanted to ask you, because we know that 55% of the global demand is China. You talked about all the trillions of dollars of infrastructure that's going to be promised to be used in the US and the EU. But what about the growth in the third world? Because the China Belt and Road Initiative, they're doing a lot of partnerships with Iran and all kinds of countries around the world to do really big mega infrastructure projects. We've got growth in South America, Africa, Middle East. Talk about the demographics. Talk about where there's going to be growth and how copper is used, because most people don't even know what is copper used for. It's used for housing and constructions, number one. You know, what else?
Telephone lines, electrical lines. You know, the Western world, from a demographic standpoint, is old, and our Gen Z and our Gen X kids are not having many kids. Fertility rates are lower than they've ever been. I saw a something yesterday that 40% of Gen X people over 40 are not married. I mean, and never been married, right? So if you take the demographic slide in population in the Western world, it's the complete opposite in the developing world. You know, for a variety of reasons, starting with the fact that birth control is prohibited in many of these countries. The idea that you have large families so that you can work the fields, you know, so on and so forth. So where the growth is in terms of population, also for the most part, does not have copper. And yet, to actually build the facilities and build the infrastructure, they require a huge amount of copper. Now, how they finance it? Well, we got the World Bank. We got we have a lot of funding mechanisms to get this stuff up and going. And with very long-term loans, the World Development Bank, you know, puts out, I don't know, $26, $28 billion a year in developing countries. China obviously has been doing it with Belt and Road. So the funding's there, because on a relative basis, the rate of return is fantastic, because they tax the roads, they tax this, you know, if the business model is there to build these things, as long as the copper's available. And that is, you know, the X factor right now in developing the undeveloped parts of the world. It all happens. It doesn't happen without copper. I mean, I hate to sound like a Johnny One Note, but it's sort of like if we were mining air, you know. Hey, Sean, we need some more air here. Otherwise, I'm going to quit breathing and the whole show's going to stop. Okay.
So, well, it is the oxygen of industry, of civilization, right? It electrifies, it turns on the lights, it's transportation, industry, even electronics, everything that we're using, our smartphones and all the smart homes and smart devices, they all take copper. If there's electricity running through it, it has copper in it, right?
Yeah, there's no question about that. So, you know, that economics will solve this, Sean. I mean, you know, we used to always say in the commodities world that the cure for high prices is high prices, because when gasoline at the pump costs $6, you know, we had 8% less mileage, because people said, hey, all right. So then prices came down because supply is built. We don't have that in copper. High prices actually gets more copper, because it keeps the total resource growing and not shriveling. If the amount of copper is available is going down, and the developing world is going to develop, this copper price has to come up to make that happen, to make it economical. Right. Because there's no magic wand here, Sean. This is moving billions of tons of dirt. This is moving the copper ore out of that dirt, yeah, putting it into, you know, refining and so on and so forth. There's no, the electronic trucks to pull out the copper require copper. I mean, it's just somewhat of a vicious circle here that we're in, and the only cure is high prices. So it's the only commodity where the cure for high prices is higher prices, in other words.
Thank you for your insights. You know, how can people learn about your book? Because you talk about these concepts of how much money is involved with this type of green growth over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Amazon.com. I mean, I wrote the original book in 2010, so I was a little bit ahead of my time, Sean. I want you to know that. But if I wrote the new book today, it would be the multi-trillion dollar green, not the billion dollar green. I'm not going to argue global warming or not being the temperatures growing. Now, you can make the argument that, well, the EU and the United States, we could be completely electric. And as long as India and China are spewing as much CO2 into the world, it doesn't make a difference. But I'm just more of an optimist than that. I've spent a fair amount of time in China. If you want to get lung cancer, go to China. Go to Beijing in the summer. They have the highest incidence rate of death of lung cancer, all because their air is incredibly polluted. They know they have to stop that. They can't be using the coal they're using. They're building 325 small nuclear power plants in China. So we're long uranium, because that is a reality. We're long copper, because that's a reality. You're not going to get rich overnight, but you're going to get rich. It just takes time.
Yeah, especially with the 10-year gap, where that's how long it takes to do the permitting and get the new production up and running. So thank you, Tobin, for your time. Really appreciate you coming on the Sean Morgan Report today.
Good to see you.
It was great to hear from Tobin. He is a legendary investor, and this is a guy who helped negotiate a historic copper deal in Mongolia, of all places. So I think he knows what he's talking about. So that wraps up the interview segment of today's show. And now here's the sponsor for today's special video, Deep South Resources. I'm about to tell you their stock ticker, so write this down. It's DSMTF. And as of this recording, it's at 5 cents a share, which is far below its all-time highs and even its recent highs in April of 9 cents a share. So it's a great entry point. Deep South Resources is an exploration and development company focused on, you guessed it, copper. And they have deposits in Zambia and Namibia. Now, they own the Haib Copper Project in Namibia, and the deposit is on a massive property of 370 square kilometers near a highway with an indicated 3.1 billion pounds of copper, which is a lot for a small cap company to have that much in the ground. Now, it's also inferred 2.2 billion pounds of copper. Now, many geographically challenged people have never heard of Namibia, but it's actually rated as one of the best mining jurisdictions in all of Africa. So what is confirmed to already be in the ground is amazing, but there's substantial exploration upside to find even more copper, and it has easy and low-cost access to those projects. It's near infrastructure, near the water and the roads and everything that they need. Now, they have two friendly mining jurisdictions, Namibia and Zambia, and they have a highly experienced management team with decades of experience in Africa, which is so important. We talked about how electric vehicles use 400% more copper than gas-powered cars. Now, they're trying to innovate their way out of that by using less copper in the batteries and so forth. But by 2030, Wood Mackenzie expects over 20 million EV charging points to be deployed globally. Now, that would take 250% more copper than what it's taking at this age or when they did the study in 2019. So it's not just the cars and the batteries that require copper. It's every part of the new infrastructure that requires it. And this is really just a matter of time before all of these EV charging stations get rolled out. And this is also breaking news. NATO is pledging to spend 2% of GDP on defense. And guess what metal modern defense requires? Of course, copper. Now, you know, I feel like a significant part of that copper demand story that Toby and I talked about wasn't even covered. And that's the electronics, the devices, and the infrastructure. you know, it's not just the transportation and the construction and the energy and the industry that runs on copper. It's all these smartphones that we carry around and everything that keeps us connected and keeps them connected. 5G rollouts, communication, data storage, the internet, artificial intelligence, smart grid infrastructure, smart appliances, it's all growing and it all takes a lot more copper than we have now. And it's not just happening in the developed world. It's a global trend. These developing countries, they're leapfrogging and installing all the 5G and all the modern stuff that the developed countries have. So it's just a lot of demand. So we've already determined in the interview with Toby, and I'm just kind of rehashing some things here, the macro story for copper is obviously very positive. There's this soaring demand, especially the green infrastructure and all those trillions of dollars that they're going to spend in the EU and the United States. But there's also this dwindling supply. With the relatively low price of copper now, it's really preventing people from investing in more exploration. And that means the explorers, like Deep South, with the known deposits, are all the more valuable. And they're also really ripe for being acquired by those bigger players. So make sure you do your own due diligence on this. The ticker symbol is DSMTF. The website for the company is deepsouthresources.com. And it's also in the description box below. You can talk to your broker about it to see if they're a good fit for you. Thank you for watching the Sean Morgan Report. We'll see you next time.